And we welcome you into another edition of Saturday Tailgate each and every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 on ESPN 102.5. The Game. Nikhail Marquise Munson with you again for episode 3 this morning. We're leading you right up until kickoff at 11 o'clock this morning. And we will remember today, right around 10:56 a.m. Central Time, when we sign off as the Marquise Munson flu game. Jordan dropped 60 20 years ago, 22 years ago, something in that range.
I mean, I'll take 30.
Listen to you.
I'll take 30, for sure.
You sound like a like an alien or some like evil spirit in a horror movie. I might have like nightmares tonight of Hollywood when I'm laying in bed, which is scary enough.
You might have nightmares if Alabama loses to South Carolina today.
We could see that. We could very well see that 9 years after the last time the Gamecocks stunned Alabama. So we will get to the Saturday spotlight in just a few minutes, but let's actually start with last night, because last night we had a trifecta of college football action, a little Friday flavor, and really kind of a night where there was only three games, but yet you got to see marquee coaches in primetime spotlight. It's a great night when you can showcase Mack Brown, Les Miles, Mike Leach, Dana Holgorsen. And that was what we had last night. Really, three fantastic football games for a Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at, first and foremost, let's give a shout out to Les Miles, because he's revitalizing that program. That, and it's weird, because when you look back on it, you look back at Jeremy Pruitt's first year, you look back at certain guys' first years, and usually they don't pan out well. The first year is usually like a drop-off, and where you're trying to rebuild the program. But, you know, kudos to Les Miles for being able to put eyes on that program early on. Same thing for Mack Brown as well, being a first-year head coach, because we see with Jeremy Pruitt, we see with Chip Kelly at UCLA, where sometimes that just doesn't work out. And, you know, and then you want to get the fans behind you as a coach early on. And I think that's what Les Miles is doing at Kansas, even though they lost a game already this season, and even though – you know, UNC lost last night, you know, that win against South Carolina was big, and you still can see the enthusiasm with the fan base. Mm-hmm. So with Mack Brown, you see he's excited on the sideline. So I look at those two coaches and I'm like, man, like it's excited to see both of them in head coaching positions again, because it feels like an old school feel when I started watching college football.
For sure. So last night, Kansas stuns Boston College. They double them up 48-24, and Boston College was about a 20-point home favorite. Les Miles and Kansas coming off really an unacceptable home loss last week against Coastal Carolina, and it wasn't a typo. They lost 12-7, and then they come back, beat Boston College. Mack Brown's win streak of four straight games at North Carolina. He started off this year 2-0. His last two games at North Carolina were wins. He had four in a row, a couple of upsets to start the year. They run out of magic last night on the road against Wake Forest, and then in a battle of Cougars, and I'm all for Cougar-on-Cougar action, especially on a Friday night, Washington State beats Houston 31-24 as Mike Leach survives against Dana Holgorsen.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much three exciting games, I think, especially with that Houston and Washington State game early on. Now, there was a turnover late in that fourth quarter. I think it was a fumble that kind of shifted the momentum to Washington State's side. And, you know, kudos to that quarterback, too. Gordon, he's going to be really good this year. And, you know, I know a lot of people look at Washington State quarterbacks and they look at them as system quarterbacks. Like, we see one now in Gardner Minshew, who's going to be starting for the Jaguars tomorrow.
Luke Falk before that, who was drafted by the Titans and never made it out of camp.
Exactly. So there's always this stigma about Washington State quarterbacks being systematic and falling into the Mike Leach system of this is his offense, so this is how he's going to run it, and he just gets quarterbacks that can kind of fit that mold. But when I looked at Gordon last night, him getting outside the pocket, him being able to extend drives, Washington State has a ton of weapons, more weapons than I actually thought they had. And, you know, kudos to Houston's defense, who, you know, we saw in that Oklahoma game, Jalen Hurts just lit that Houston defense up. And then in that first half of that Houston game, they looked like a completely different team on that end. So it was an interesting game to watch, and usually Friday games aren't, you know. exciting enough, but you know, last night it was pretty good.
No, it was really good. All right, so Captain Kurt, here we go on a Saturday morning. Let's get to the spotlight. All right, time for the Saturday Spotlight, and I can assure you this will probably be the only week, the only edition of Saturday Tailgate, where our Spotlight will not feature a game with ranked opponent against ranked opponent.
Why is that, Nick? Let's explain why.
Because the scheduling is very, very poor. In college football, sometimes, as a sport, you drop the ball, but just when you think it's kind of one of those chalk weekends where all the favorites, all the ranked teams are going to go on the road, they're favored by 17 points, 24 points, and they're going to win. You know, when night falls tonight and the sun goes down and we get ready to go to bed and college football and Pac-12 after dark comes to a close around 11:30 tonight, you know there's going to be somebody that dropped the ball and there was going to be an upset. Much like Boston College last night with Kansas, it could be Clemson, it could be Alabama, it could be Ohio State. There will be one ranked team that stumbles and drops the ball today.
You think so?
It might not be one of the top 10 teams. It might not be Bama, but somebody in the top 25 will go down today in a game where, at least on paper, they shouldn't.
No, I agree with you 100%. And they showed a stat on game day where it was, I think it was week 7 one year, to where it was, I can't remember how many, what number of teams in the top 25 that lost that were cupcake games pretty much. And this is why Nick Saban preaches this all the time, that respect your opponent. And I know people laugh at that, like, oh, come on, Nick Saban, like, you don't respect New Mexico State, do you really? And it's true, because we saw with Tennessee and Georgia State that, you know, if you come in with that mentality of we're 25 point under, or, you know, we're 25 points ahead of this team and we can beat them with a breeze, that be the team that stops you. They have a scheme that you weren't prepared for, that you thought you were prepared for, and then all of a sudden that team punches you in the mouth early on in the first half, and then you're kind of miscombobulated going to halftime wondering, you know, how are we going to escape this game, and then you don't. So, you know, and it's easier to look at the other teams. It's like when you look at Clemson, when you look at Alabama, when you look at some of these top tier teams you that are well coached with Nick Saban and Dabo and, you know, Ryan Day and what he's been doing so far, you know, they've coached their team well enough to not have that happen. Now, if Michigan was playing today, we've seen the last two games Michigan's played, and those games, especially that game against Army, that game could have went Army's way, and we could have saw an upset last week, mm-hmm, with Michigan and Army, and a lot of people did not expect that to happen. Even I didn't. I thought it was going to be a 3-touchdown favorite for Michigan. We said it on the pick segment at the end, and you know, so it's, you know, I know everybody says it's one game at a time, respect your opponent, and that it's very cliche to say all those things, but it's true in hindsight, because you can look at some of these games and, you know, some of these games may not be fun to watch, but I mean, if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, it's anything goes at that point.
Number 2 Alabama goes to South Carolina today, a 2:30 kick as the SEC on CBS returns for the first time this fall. The last time Alabama was at Williams-Brice Stadium in South Carolina was 2010. Alabama was on a win streak where the last loss they had was the 2007 Iron Bowl. They ran their table in the regular season in 08. They ran the table in 09. They were either 2-0 or 3-0 going into South Carolina in 2010. And Stephen Garcia, Lattimore, Jeffrey, Stephon Gilmore, Melvin Ingram, Steve Spurrier had some dudes on that team. And they were a double-digit underdog, and they beat Alabama by 14 points.
Yeah, and that's credit to and it's funny, because we have these conversations about it takes a special type of quarterback to beat Alabama, with the exception of Stephen Garcia. But it's just, when you look at the players around him, when you have a guy like Marcus Lattimore who can run the football, when you have a guy who's your top target in Alshon Jeffrey, who went neck and neck with Julio Jones in that game when it came to stats, and Dre Kirkpatrick got destroyed by Alshon Jeffrey in that game. So, you know, it takes a lot of talent around you to be able to beat Alabama. It's not just a quarterback. And I know I hear that narrative a lot, with, you know, with Johnny Manziel, with Tim Tebow, with Deshaun Watson. But when you look at those guys, even those guys had NFL caliber talents. When you look at Johnny Manziel, his top target was Mike Evans, who's playing in the NFL. Look at Deshaun Watson, he had that front seven on defense. And then you had guys like Mike Williams and Hunter Renfrow and Deion Kane. And when you look at Tebow, he's had guys like Percy Harvin and Riley Cooper and those guys on defense as well. So it takes special talent, and that's what that team had in South Carolina in 2010, where they had a guy like Melvin Gordon, who's still in the, or Melvin Ingram, excuse me, that's still in the league. Stephon Gilmore still playing at a high level in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the jury's still out on how good Marcus Lattimore could have been if he would have stayed healthy his whole career. And Alshon Jeffrey playing well with the Eagles. So it takes special talent to beat Alabama, and that team had that special talent on top of having that home advantage.
Speaking of special talent, Clemson has talent all over the field. They are the number one team in the country. They go to Syracuse tonight at the Carrier Dome as about a 4-touchdown favorite. And last year, Clemson hosted Syracuse. Syracuse had them on the ropes all day long. Trevor Lawrence comes in, probably the birth of Trevor Lawrence, as they avoided the upset last year. And this year they go into Syracuse, and Cuse is coming off of an embarrassing loss to, I think it was Maryland.
Mike Locksley in Maryland. And you gotta, and that's once again what I said earlier of, man, I know a lot of people thought that this first year was going to be growing pains for Mike Locksley, and he came out and put the brakes, scoring 62 points on this Syracuse defense. And I know a lot of people look at it when they looked at Clemson's schedule of, that's a tough two-game stretch when you got Texas A&M and you got Syracuse back-to-back. And now, ever since that loss, people kind of look at it like, you know, this is not a big deal, but it still is. You know, it's still a game that has caused Clemson problems throughout the years. It's still a game that is on the road that you got to kind of hone in on. And last time you played them on the road, they didn't derail your college football playoff hopes because you still lost that game, you know, won the conference, and then all of a sudden still made it as a 4 seed in the college football playoffs where you lost to Alabama. So, you know, I think this is a game that Clemson is likely taken serious because this is going to be a tough matchup for them. It may be the hardest game left on their schedule, depending on, you know, what the rest of the schedule does, depending on what Miami does, and maybe Miami can meet them in a conference championship game. But, you know, I think this is a tough game for Clemson, and they're going to have to get away with it on the road. So that's going to be tough for them.
And lastly, Ohio State on the road today as they take on Indiana. And it's like the same movie every single year when Ohio State and Indiana play. Indiana is always usually between a 14 and a 21-point underdog. And through 2.5, 3 quarters, Indiana's hanging in. They're in the game against Ohio State. And then the Buckeyes pull away late. If there's going to be one stumbling block for a top 10 road team today, I feel I'm not calling the upset. I'm not calling for it. But I think Ohio State needs to be very careful against Indiana.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, we look at last week's win against Cincinnati, but that was a Cincinnati team that barely cracked UCLA. And that UCLA team is not that good.
Yeah.
And so I look at this game. This could be a gotcha game, but man, Justin Fields has just been great this season. Him and that running game and that defense alone, I think they can hold off on. I just don't think this is going to be the game that does it for Ohio State. I think later on down the season, it's going to be one of those, ha, I gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
You're not in the playoffs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
No team in this conference is going now. It's going to be one of those games later on, but I just don't think Indiana's going to do it. I think when I look at this Ohio State offense, man, they're on a hot streak right now. After that Cincinnati game and the way Justin Fields played in that first game, it's when he had 6 touchdowns, and I think this team is just way too good to lose this early in the season. Maybe later, but not this early.
Speaking of Ohio State and Indiana, you can hear that today at 11 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And then later tonight, Duke comes to Murfreesboro as David Cutcliffe takes on Rick Stockstill and MTSU at 5 o'clock. And then also today on 94.9 Game 2, Alabama at South Carolina, followed by Florida and Kentucky. We'll come back. Speaking of the SEC, we will get to the SEC swing. That does include Florida, Kentucky. The Vols look to finally get a win in 2019 and a good one between the SEC and the Big 12. A little crossover action today in Starkville. SEC swing next on Saturday Tailgate. He's Marquise Munson. I'm Nick Hale. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Saturday Tailgate indeed. Welcome back in. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Hale, Marquise Munson with you each and every Saturday morning, leading you right up until kickoff. Handful of good games today on 102.5 The Game, Ohio State, Indiana, followed by Duke and MTSU. 94.9 Game 2 will have Alabama, South Carolina, followed by Florida and Kentucky. Captain Kurt, let's roll to the swing.
Now, let's focus in on the Southeastern Conference. With SEC Swing. A quick thought on every SEC matchup this weekend.
That is correct. Time for the SEC Swing. We do it every week at 9:15 here on Saturday Tailgate Marquise Munson. We begin in Knoxville, where Tennessee Volunteers. We have to. Okay. But we won't spend too much time on this game because really you shouldn't have to spend much time on UT Chattanooga because the last time I checked, Terrell Owens was not going to walk through that door. Although, speaking of walking through a door, how many fans will walk through the doors at Neyland Stadium today is the question. I'm going to say just about 50,000 people, and that's not good because the place holds over well over 100 grand.
Yeah, I mean, that's not good at all, especially do you want to watch your team struggle against a team out of conference, not even in a Power 5? Do you want to watch that live in the heat? And it's hot this weekend. So that's going to be the question for Tennessee fans. Are you going to want to go to that game, watch it live, even though they do serve alcohol now? And the way this team's been playing over the last couple weeks, I mean, if I was a fan, I probably would hold off on this game. Now, and there's going to be some true diehards that are obviously, you know, they're going to stick to this team till the wheels fall off. And, you know, currently they're riding on three right now because, you know, 0-2 start, you know, it's not a good start for Jeremy Pruitt. And I think that's the way the fans are going to use to vocalize how they feel about this season. Of not showing up to games and not being behind Jeremy Pruitt. And that's going to be the hard part that he's going to have to overcome. Now, like I said earlier with Les and with Mac and some of these first-year coaches, you know, it takes a while to build that fan base and to build, you know, the fan base being behind you. And, you know, Jeremy Pruitt hasn't had that win or he hasn't had any outside of the Auburn game. Maybe fans opened their eyes just a little bit when that Auburn win last year, but even then he fumbled that away. So, you know, now he's trying to buy back this fan base that, you know, and it's not going to take UT Chattanooga to do it because, I mean, this is a team that you're supposed to beat. So
yeah, it really is a no-win situation because, you know, you're a four-touchdown favorite. If you win the game by 20 points, it doesn't impress anybody. If you eke out a win, it's like, oh, my God, what is going on with this program? If you lose, God forbid, you know, then the Titanic is really sunk. But, I mean, short of winning this game 59-0, you're really going to come away with nothing. And I know a win's a win. But when you look at what's ahead and the way they've played the first 2 weeks, you're realistically staring 1-6 in the face.
Yeah, and especially when you look at what Florida's been able to do, you look at what Alabama and Georgia, obviously they're solidified, but even with Mississippi State and looking at that offense and seeing what they've been able to do, scoring 38 points in their last two games, and you know I know they got a game tonight as well, so even that game is not a gimme. In the SEC, and then UAB is not a gimme because UAB, even though they're out of conference, not a Power 5, they're a pretty good non-conference opponent. And then you look at the SEC East that you got to go through, and you know Vandy is probably still on the same teeter-tot as Tennessee, but even that game hasn't went your way either. So that's not a gimme game. You know, Missouri and Kelly Bryant, they're figuring out their offense, kind of working on their defense a little bit. Kentucky, even though with a backup quarterback, we'll see how they play tonight against Florida. But it's just like there's no gimme games on here for Tennessee outside of this one. Mm-hmm. So it only gets tougher after this one. And obviously you wanted to go into this one 3-0 after, you know, going into these tough games. But it's unfortunate that they don't.
Speaking of Florida and Kentucky, the ninth-ranked Gators look for revenge tonight as they go to Commonwealth Stadium, Kroger Field, looking for payback last year when Kentucky stunned the Gators in the Swamp. Mark Stoops looking to build off of that 10-win year last year. They're off to a good start at 2-0, but now junior quarterback Terry Wilson out for the year with a torn patellar tendon. In comes transfer Sawyer Smith. The Gators about a 9-point favorite. It feels like Florida's been off the radar for 3 or 4 weeks since that Miami game. They had a bye. They had a cupcake game. And Felipe Franks has not looked like many thought. His play tonight against the good Kentucky defense, paramount if the Gators are going to get revenge.
Yeah, what's so crazy about it is, Nick, that we looked at this SEC East, the quarterbacks just alone. We said all offseason that Garantano has improved. We said all offseason that, you know, Felipe Franks under another season under Dan Mullen, he's going to look a lot different. Jim Chaney is going to change the way Garantano does. And then Kelly Bryant obviously is doing his thing at Missouri, but it's been the complete opposite with those two quarterbacks. With Felipe Franks, he's making decisions that he didn't make last year. He's throwing balls that you wouldn't see him throw last year. Now, maybe that's just him trying to take more chances as a passer. And that's one thing I saw from Jalen in his, I guess it was his second start before Tua came in, is that Jalen, he was a little timid to throw the football because he didn't want to make mistakes. And I think it's the opposite with Felipe Franks, to where he's now taking those mistakes that we're known for him not making those. And we've seen that. And it's hard to dictate how good he can be this season based off of that Miami game and a cupcake game in a bye week. So it's kind of hard to determine what Felipe Franks you're going to actually get. Tonight will be the test to see which Felipe Franks you're going to get throughout the season. And, you know, he played well against Miami. He had some certain hiccups there, but he got his team to win. And I think that's what matters. And, you know, obviously he looked good against a cupcake team because, quite frankly, that's what you're going to do when you play a team out of conference, and that's what you should do. So, sure. You know, that's one thing with Felipe that we want to see, which Felipe we're going to get this season, because a lot of people expect this Florida team to be pretty good in the SEC East. And looking how weak the SEC East is now, and looking, you know, at the landscape of it with two quarterbacks that are on two programs that are on backup quarterbacks, and then you have, you know, other teams with one losses on their record. You know, Kentucky and Florida are the two teams that are still teeter-totting in the SEC East, and a lot of people expect Florida to be that team to try to compete with Georgia. And right now, I mean, I just don't think they can do it.
Mississippi State today takes on Kansas State. A little crossover action between the Big 12 and the SEC as Tommy Stevens and Joe Moorhead look to continue rolling along and improve to 3-0. Do we have a status update on Tommy Stevens? Were you able? I'm pretty sure he's active, and I'm just basing that off of the line. If he was out, the line would be completely different.
Yeah, I think he's still... he's questionable. He's been questionable all week, but I was listening to his press conference, and he said he felt good. He, most players are going to say that, obviously, because they're going to want to play. But, you know, he said he feels good. So I would say that he will be out there today. And it's one of those games that, you know, it's a non-conference opponent. It's not – see, if this was UT Chattanooga, this may be a game that if you're Joe Moorhead, you can think about, like, maybe I should go with Keontae, or I should go with the backup quarterback and – you know, kind of sit him out and let him rest this game, even though, like I said, respect your opponent, but let's also think about long-term as well. But, you know, I think he'll play today.
Couple of cupcake games for some SEC teams today. Georgia takes on Arkansas State. Auburn has Kent State, and LSU has Northwestern State. We will come back and focus in on what should be the marquee game in the conference today. At least CBS is telling us so. Alabama, South Carolina. Can Ryan Helinski replicate what Stephen Garcia did 9 years ago? We'll get into that next here on Saturday Tailgate. Nick and Marquise, a.k.a. Tone Loke. Little funky Cole Medina from Mr. Munson today.
Funky Code Medina Munson.
Medina Munson.
Yeah,
there it could be your daughter's name, you know, 10 years from now when you have your first kid. Just saying.
It could be. Good matter of fact, I might do that.
There you go. We're back after this on Saturday Tailgate. Saturday Tailgate rolling on live here on episode 3. Good to have you in here on September the 14th. Nick and Marquise with you until 11 o'clock, leading you right up until kickoff today. Just about 13 minutes, we will get to another edition of the Coach's Corner. This week, you'll hear from Urban Meyer, now doing really good work on Fox Sports' college football pregame show. You'll also hear from Dino Babers, Dan Mullen, Ed Orgeron, and Nick Saban. But speaking of Nick Saban, his Crimson Tide go to South Carolina today to take on the Gamecocks. And the last time they were there, Alabama got knocked off by 14 points, 35-21. Stephen Garcia had himself a day. And Nick Saban said, quote, "What I remember from it is we got the lining kicked out of our britches. I don't know if you know what that means, but that means you got your butt kicked so bad you got no seam in the back of your pants. So, yeah, I remember." Now, his players might not, because they were in fifth grade reading Goosebumps books and having, you know, packed lunches. But Nick Saban remembers it vividly.
Oh, no, absolutely. And that was a game that, you know, once again, Alabama was supposed to win that game. The talent on that Alabama team, from the Courtney Upshaws, the Dante Hightowers, Julio Jones on offense, Mark Ingram in the running back, they had so much talent on that team. And that was a game that they went into. South Carolina, and this was a good South Carolina team. This is, you know, even though you look at the point spread, and it obviously didn't work in South Carolina's favor, but they had some talent on that team, and we mentioned it earlier. So, and that was just one of the games to where you have to have a perfect game to get past a team like Alabama. I don't care if you're on the road. I don't care if you're at Bryant Denny Stadium. You have to have that perfect game. Like, for example, like Nick Fitzgerald a couple years ago could have been Stephen Garcia, to where he had Alabama in Starkville on the ropes, and then Jalen Hurts obviously had that game-winning, you know, touchdown drive that win them the game. I think there's some questionable play calling on the offensive end for Mississippi State, but they could have won that game. And it takes one of those performances. Now, we don't think Nick Fitzgerald is on the level of Johnny Manziel and Deshaun Watson and Tebow and all these quarterbacks that beat Alabama, but he had the perfect game, and I think that's what Stephen Garcia had when he played against Alabama. He didn't make any mistakes. He didn't, you know, he played within the offense. Marcus Lattimore was able to get the running game going, you know, and that's one thing Alabama pride themselves on, is stopping the run game. And Marcus Lattimore just ran all through the Alabama defense. And, you know, that's one thing Nick Saban likes to do, is stop the run. And then, not to mention, if you're not going to stop the run, at least stop him in the secondary. And they couldn't do that either, because Alshon Jeffrey had over 100 yards in that game. So it was a lot. It doesn't take a spread quarterback to beat Alabama. It doesn't take, you know, a lot of things that a lot of people say, that marquee headline quarterback. It takes a perfect performance from both ends of the field. It takes getting a couple turnovers, forcing Alabama to kick field goals with, God forbid, every Alabama fan prays. I think Jeremy Shelley was the kicker at that point for Alabama. So it takes that kind of performance to be able to get past a team like Alabama.
And you look at the South Carolina side of things for today. You know, Jake Bentley got hurt. He's out indefinitely. That was at the end of the North Carolina game, where South Carolina got upset by Mack Brown and the Tar Heels. Insert Ryan Helinski, who last week goes 24 of 30 for 282, two touchdowns. He is the younger brother of Tyler Helinski, who tragically passed away at Washington State. And Helinski's a highly touted kid, highly recruited prospect from Will Muschamp in one of his previous recruiting classes. But this is one of those games where I feel like South Carolina needs to get him in a groove early, get his confidence going, and also kind of settle the jitters down, because that stadium is going to be electric. That is one of the loudest stadiums. When they get going with a Sandstorm song in pregame and they're waving, like, that place starts to shake. But you know what? South Carolina is not as good as they were in 2010 with Spurrier and some of the players you mentioned. But they've got a talented running back in Rico Dowdle, Brian Edwards at wide receiver. This is not a South Carolina team void of talent. They've got some guys that could make some plays against Alabama if they can get their quarterback settled in and comfortable early on.
Yeah, and I think the way you do that is by using Rico. And, you know, when you look at that running game, his first start last week where they dominated Charleston Southern, and I know Charleston Southern and Alabama are in two different categories, but, you know, he threw for, you know, 282 yards. He had two touchdowns. He did have an interception, but you're going to get those when you get, you know, a young freshman quarterback that's going to start for your team. But they had 493 yards on the ground, and I think that's what helped him get a little bit more comfortable in the pocket, was when you have that running game that's balanced. It's not just Rico. Like, you know, Feaster could, you know, have a big game as well. They got some running backs that they can put in that rotation to kind of, you know, get them going a little bit, and mm-hmm. that opens up the passing game. Obviously, you know, football fundamentals, run the football, open the passing game, and I think that's what will help him get more comfortable. And going back to that Mississippi State game, I think that's what helped Nick Fitzgerald in that game, was they had an effective running game in that game as well. And it was, Nick Fitzgerald was also using his feet, and, you know, the running backs were also running the football well. And Alabama's Achilles heel right now is at the linebacker position, and, you know, you want to run the full, and, you know, they're still trying to figure out things on their defensive line. So I think running the football, establishing that run, and, you know, getting a young quarterback like that, you know, comfortable of, you know, I don't have to throw every possession to try to win this game. because we got a running game that's helping us out a little bit. And then that maybe if, you know, Edwards is open for a couple plays, I can get the ball to him too as well. So, you know, it's going to take that for him to get comfortable in this offense.
Will Muschamp, obviously a defensive coach by trade and pedigree, has got a really good defensive line. They're going to need to be able to generate some pressure against Tua Tagovailoa, or else Alabama's wide receivers will feast on this South Carolina secondary. But one concern for Alabama in this game, and yeah, they're a 25-point road favorite, but this feels like, and you'll hear from Saban in the coach's corner on this, this might be the worst group of running backs. And I say that with air quotes, because when you got guys like Najee Harris and Brian Robinson, they're not bad running backs. But going back to the Saban decade-plus run of excellence, from Glenn Coffey to Ingram to Richardson to Lacy, and you can just go through, they've always had one guy who was the premier back, the guy that was getting a bulk of the carries. Like, it was Ingram, and then Richardson was like the little brother, and then Richardson graduated, and then it became Lacy. Now, all of a sudden, between Harris and Brian Robinson, and I know circumstances dictate the way stats look at times, the first 2 weeks, they didn't need to, you know, pound the ball and run it 35 times for one guy, but neither back has had a 100-yard game so far.
Yeah, I look at it like this. For one, I think Derrick Henry was kind of like the last of the primary back in for Alabama. You know, Kenyon Drake wasn't the most powerful runner in the world. You're not going to give the ball to him 20 times a game. He was more of a Josh Jacobs role. But I think once it got to Damian Harris, Bo Scarborough, and, you know, Josh Jacobs and Najee Harris and so on and so forth, they've used running back by committee. It wasn't just, we're going to give the ball to Ingram 30 times a game. We're going to give the ball to Lacy 30 times a game. Now we're going to spread out our whole running back core because we have so much talent. Because Damian, although Damian's the primary back, he's not a home run hitter, so we can use him in certain aspects. You know, Josh Jacobs, he's not the home run hitter yet, but we can use him out in the backfield to help out our quarterback if he gets in trouble and he can catch it out of the backfield. Bo Scarborough can be that power back that we need. So it feels like they got three running backs that can basically, that one running back used to do. They have three of them that can do each separate skill set. And I think they haven't had to use that ability as well. Because, I mean, you have four of the most talented wide receivers in the country on your team. And I think it takes off a lot because you have one of the most talented wide receiver cores in Nick Saban's era at Alabama. Because it's always been similar to what you said with the running backs. It's always been that one guy. It's always been Julio. Then once it was Julio, then it was Amari. And once it was Amari, it was Calvin Ridley. So now you're seeing the same thing, but it's transitioned to the running back position where it's, you know, we're going to have guys that we just switch out instead of having that, you know, that one back that we rely on so much.
Coming up next, we will get to the coach's corner. You're going to hear from Dan Mullen, Dino Babers, Ed Orgeron, Urban Meyer now doing studio work, and Nick Saban on those running back struggles. The coach's corner coming up next here on Saturday Tailgate. Nick and Marquise on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into another edition of Saturday Tailgate. Nick Hale, Marquise Munson with you here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up top of the hour, we will kick off hour number two with another installment of In or Out on a handful of statements throughout the college football landscape. But right now, it is time for another installment of the Coach's Corner, where we go around the SEC and around the country and give you some sound bites from a handful of coaches regarding a handful of issues. Let's actually start with the head coach of the Florida Gators, Dan Mullen, talking about learning from last year's upset against Kentucky.
I think our guys really learned. I think we learned a lot about the players. You know, we didn't. I don't know that we were always putting everybody in the best position to make plays. I think we learned what guys did well and poorly at that point. And you know, we maybe had some guys out of position, and you know, some guys probably playing more than they should. Other guys not playing as much as they should. In those ways, I think losing a game kind of motivated the guys in a different way. What we need to do and our sense of urgency of how hard it is to win. And you know, so I think they took a lot out of it. I think we went on a pretty good winning streak after that game. And you know, which sometimes happens. You know, I know we hadn't had a lot of success, I guess, the year before, but came in early and had, you know, I mean, game one was good, but then I think we really learned, especially the coaches. You know, I mean, like you say, our job is put guys in the best position to make plays, and I don't think we were doing that, and not by anything but lack of knowing all the guys on the team and experience of knowing the players and how they react and respond in the game.
Florida head coach Dan Mullen, and I don't think Florida's going to come in here and just blow out Kentucky because Terry Wilson is out. I think Kentucky's defense is still very talented, and I'm not a huge Felipe Franks guy, but I do believe the Gators get revenge tonight.
Yeah, I think they will. And when I know we're not supposed to look at last year's games, but when you do look at last year's game when Kentucky won, I mean, Benny Snell had a great game, 175 yards. He had 27 carries in that game. Even Terry Wilson had 105 yards, and you're not going to get that same production. You're not going to get that same running ability. And, you know, obviously their defense played pretty well as well, but I still have my questions about Felipe, and I still want to see Felipe improve, and I think this is the game to do it. It's, you know, the SEC test, obviously. This defense is still good, even though they lost Josh Allen from last year. You know, I think they still got good talent on their defense, especially Cash, the homie Cash. That's the best name you can ever have if you're in college football. But, you know, I think this defense can still hold up to compete, and we're going to see if in fact, Dan Mullen has improved Felipe Frank's skill set, because even in that presser, he also talked about some of the things that he need to work on, and, you know, decision-making is one of those things. So, you know, that's going to be the big test for Felipe, and to see if he can be able to compete with an SEC, you know, style opponents.
Up next is Syracuse head coach Dino Babers, as the Orange will take on Clemson today. And here's the head coach of the Syracuse Orange, Dino Babers, talking about applying some pressure to Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence.
What we need to do, we had no pass rush, okay? So we have to find a way to get a pass rush. You don't let an NFL quarterback stand back there and just, you've got to try to find a way to get some kind of pressure on him, or it's going to be a long day. I don't know how we're going to do that yet, because they're really good at protecting him, and rightfully so. And we wouldn't be the first football team that's played him and tried to put pressure on him, and when the game was over, feel empty-handed when it comes to that, that they really didn't get an opportunity to touch him. You know, Game of Thrones, he's got a castle, he's got a moat, he's got some dragons. That dude's protected. So, and you really don't get his chance unless he comes out of the pocket. When he comes out of the pocket, he's athletic, he's fast, and he might throw better on the move than he does in the pocket. I mean, he's the real deal. So I hope we can put some pressure on him, but there's a lot of teams that have played him and they haven't been able to do it.
Syracuse head coach Dino Babers, and look, let's face it, Trevor Lawrence entered this year, right? I mean, it was give or take he or Tua Tagovailoa as the odds-on preseason favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. And this guy is just way too talented to have the start to the season that he has had. And it's been against lesser competition, which maybe would be a little cause for concern. But Trevor Lawrence so far through 2 weeks, he's got 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. It's time for Trevor Lawrence to statistically light it up.
Yeah, and I felt like last week was going to be that game, that Texas A&M game was going to be I won't even say breakout game, but that game to get out of the funk of that Georgia Tech game that he had. And, you know, maybe he doesn't have to, because Travis Etienne has been playing extremely well, and somebody that needs to be in Heisman conversations as well. But I don't agree with guys like, you know, Tim Brando, who says that, you know, he's still kind of the Heisman favorite. I mean, come on, man. Like, have you seen what Tua's been able to do? Have you seen what Jalen Hurts is able to do as well?
Justin Fields.
And it's just even Joe Burrow. Yeah, like, I would put Joe Burrow right now over Trevor Lawrence.
If you are specifically ranking Heisman candidates right now, not on preseason expectations, but through performance through the first 2 or 3 weeks of college football, there's no way you can justify Trevor Lawrence in your top five.
No, there's not. And What do you look for in a Heisman? That marquee win. Where's that marquee win going to come for Trevor Lawrence? And it's not. I think Joe Burrow's got that marquee win. I think Jalen has an opportunity to get his marquee win when he goes up against Texas. I think Tua still has an opportunity, you know, in the SEC championship and maybe that game against LSU to have that marquee win to put him over the hump. And same thing for Justin Fields with, oh, you know, he's going to have that chance to have that marquee win. Trevor Lawrence is not. And if you put him in the Heisman race, it's only going to be because of stats. It's not going to be because he made his team better. And he does make his team better. But also, I think having a guy like Travis Etienne kind of helps him out a lot, because he would really be struggling if he didn't have a guy like him.
Let's get to LSU head coach Ed Orgeron, who was on ESPN this week on the Get Up show. And he says all eyes on LSU.
Obviously, it's good for LSU. It's where we want to be. The expectations are high, but that's what you know when you come to LSU. But we have to block out the noise. There's a lot of things we need to improve on, especially defensively. We didn't play well in the second half, so we're working hard on that today and this week. Our guys came out. I'm talking about fundamentals, ongoing skill development, blocking out the noise, getting better. It's all about LSU and a daily process.
There you go, Ed Orgeron, head coach of LSU. Look, the program has looked great. Joe Burrow at quarterback has looked great. The Texas win was a marquee victory for Ed Orgeron. That being said, let's see it in conference, and let's see it against the teams that you've had trouble beating.
Yeah, and that's,
you know, that opportunity will come, and we got to wait.
Yeah, and that's the and that question was kind of set up. And I know it was cut out of the clip, but it was set up to where Ryan Clark and Marie Taylor were kind of asking him about Alabama and is this team built to beat a team like Alabama? And obviously, you know, he gave the coach's answers like, we're taking it one game at a time. I'm not going to try to do his voice because that would mess up my voice even worse.
You do sound like a Coach O this morning.
Go Tigers.
You got a little Ed Orgeron in
there. Yeah, go Tigers. But, you know, I think his team is built. His team is definitely built to be a playoff contender, but what concerns me about LSU is watching that secondary and how they played and watching that defense. It's not the same defense as we saw last year. Now, mind you, you don't have Greedy Williams. You don't have Devin White. You know, you don't have that talent on defense, but...
Yeah, Grant Delpit's pretty good, though.
Yeah,
he could be a top five pick in the draft.
Yeah, easily, but I just don't think as a collective, like, if you watch that Texas game, if Joe Burrow did not play the way he did, that could have been a closer game than what the final score was.
Well, give some credit though to Texas. I mean, yeah, Sam absolutely. Ellinger can put up points too.
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to see more from LSU's defense, and maybe I'm just putting too much because their two first games were cupcakes, and then that Texas game is kind of like my first visual of that defense. But I want to see them kind of improve throughout the season because we know what you're going to get out of Joe Burrow in that offense, especially with them changing into a spread offense. But I just think I want to see more from the defense and to really determine whether or not this LSU team can be a playoff team. So all eyes are definitely on them at this point.
Let's get to Urban Meyer, former head coach of the Florida Gators, former head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes. He was on Colin Cowherd's show this week on FS1 talking about the SEC and strength of schedule.
Yeah, but you have to figure, too, the SEC is getting two teams a year in the playoff, and Ohio State's not. So does schedule strength really matter? That's the question. That, you know, does it matter? And should it matter more? Those are all debates that I remember Gene and I talking about it, and you can say schedule strength matters, but wait a minute, does it? You know, if Ohio State doesn't get in the playoff or another school doesn't get in the playoff and they're playing the nine conference games and another big-time opponent and they don't get in, yet someone's playing eight conference games and then maybe not the strongest non-conference, but they do get two in. Those are all conversations you have to have.
You know, it's funny. I've heard this now from Urban Meyer. You know, former SEC coach, you defend the SEC when you're at Florida. You go to Ohio State, you now work for Fox, and Fox doesn't have the SEC package. They have the Big Ten, they have the Big 12, and you get this anti-SEC bias. Tim Brando, same thing, was with CBS for years, the SEC on CBS pregame host. He hyped up the conference. He was a Bama hater and an LSU apologist, but he hyped up the conference. Tim Brando leaves CBS, he goes to Fox Sports. Now all of a sudden he's anti-CBS. It's funny the way you kind of slant your opinion when you're working for a certain conference.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
Yeah, and what's so crazy about that is, you know, yeah, you play nine conference opponents, but guess what? One of your conference losses is a team that finishes the season at 6-6. So maybe don't do that. At least, yeah, Alabama's playing eight non-conference games, but they're beating the conference opponents that they're supposed to beat, and they're having competitive games with the teams that they're going to have to compete with. Georgia, same way. You know, Florida was good last year, and then, you know, Georgia pretty much single-handedly beat them, and you know, it's just, I hate that narrative of like, well, you know, maybe you should schedule, you know, tougher opponents. And obviously Alabama's now doing home and homes. I think Wisconsin is on the horizon, and Miami, USC, you know, Notre Dame and all these teams. So now Alabama's trying to counteract that with, yeah, we don't have eight, you know, non-conference. We have eight SEC games, but we also have these non-conference games coming up in the future. So, And it's just not now that's how Saban's been able to combat that. But Saban, and there's a lot of other coaches that have been big components on improving, you know, to nine games in the conference. And, you know, obviously Saban is the one that got the muscle to do it. out of all the SEC coaches, so it's going to take all of them collectively.
Well, like what should the SEC do? I mean, Auburn schedules Oregon out of conference season opener. Justin Herbert, Heisman quarterback. LSU goes to Texas and plays them in Austin. So SEC teams are scheduling out of conference premier showdowns against good programs early on. I don't know what else you're supposed to do, because last time I checked, to schedule a game against an opponent, it takes two. It's not just, hey, we'll play you. Like, the other team has to agree to it and say, okay, yeah, we'll take $900,000 and come in and get our brains beat in.
Yeah, like Nick Saban said last week, if call them, like, go schedule us a team. We'll play anybody. We don't care. And you look at Georgia. Georgia's playing Notre Dame. And it's just like, I don't know what you want them to do when it comes to scheduling. Now, and like I said, Nick Saban has the muscle to change that. And Nick Saban always says that he plays within the rules. Like, with the whole grad transfer rule that everybody said was going to benefit Alabama because everybody's going to want to transfer to Alabama. He's like, look, like, if these are the rules, and don't get mad at me because I take advantage of the rules. Don't be mad at me because we have 8 games, and that's what the conference rule is, that we have 8 SEC games, and I just beat up on everybody in the SEC. So don't get mad at me. Let's change it then, because I don't care either way. Like, I don't. Like, you can schedule 9-10 games. Nick Saban, he's just going to compete with whoever's on their schedule. So I don't think it's a ploy for the SEC to kind of sneak in to get 2 teams in the conference, you know, in the playoffs, because they have a weak, you know, schedule or whatever that the case may be that Urban's explaining. But it's just, no, we play within the rules. So if you want to change it, tell NCAA, tell the SEC, call Greg Sankey, and let's change it then.
Coming up at 10:15, we'll talk all things SEC with Michael Bratton from Saturday Down South. But up next, we kick off hour number 2 with another game of In or Out. That is next here on Saturday Tailgate. Nick and Marquise on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.